I mean, the level of juice for this football team this week, really going back to late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, it is at a level that I have not sensed since 2012 probably. I mean, we had legitimate, you know, better than 500 possibilities with you-know-who at quarterback in 2015, 2016, and 2017. But, wow, this is fun right now, and we are just four games into the season. Joining us right now is one of my favorite guests to have on the show to talk ball with and other things is Mike Jones, who writes for The Athletic now, covering the league at By Mike Jones on X, on Twitter. He, of course, many years, the number one guy covering the football team for the Washington Post. I mean, there's some real optimism after four games, not only in the quarterback, but just now in the direction of the team this year. What's your reaction so far?
Yeah, it's surprising that the fortunes look the way they do after 4 weeks. Now, again, look, this thing is a marathon. But normally you kind of start getting a sense of where things are heading at this quarter mark. And we just finished the first quarter of the season just about. And things are trending in the direction that you really would hope they would have trended. And you look at the rest of the teams in this division, and they're, you know, some of them are disaster, some of them are injury riddled. And so you have to wonder, man, can they actually build something here and have success this year in Washington? I thought that, look, we'd see some promising things here and there, but that they really would be building for next year. But the way that they have gone about preparing and positioning Jaden Daniels for success, hats off to Cliff Kingsbury, especially when you contrast it with the indecision and the aimlessness that the Chicago Bears are taking as they try to get the most out of Caleb Williams. It's night and day, and the results are different as well. And it's just a smart approach. And then we're seeing improvement from this defense, which, you know, had looked pretty shaky for the first few weeks, and we saw them getting off the field on fourth downs, forcing for loss of downs, forcing turnovers, things like that that you have to have. It's looking promising, and it's a feeling that this fan base has definitely been dying for a long time, and it just feels in a way. A buddy of mine texted me just yesterday asking about comparisons between 2012. And now, well, look, 2012, remember, they were 3-6 before they turned things around down the stretch with RG3 and Shanahan. This is starting earlier where you're seeing, you know, positive signs. Again, it's a long season, but you got to feel good by the signs that you're seeing and the potential that this team and this quarterback are displaying.
All right, let's cut to the chase because I've taken a bunch of calls on this already today. What do you think's possible for this year? I don't want to look to 25, 26 and right. What this guy will look like then. What's possible right now with this team?
I mean, they can compete in the division right now if the division stays the way it does. I mean, Dallas is, you know, dealing with injuries. Philly is dealing with injuries. One of those teams is going to get healthy. They will be better. I don't know if Nick Sirianni is going to figure this thing out. Something's missing. Something's wrong there in Philly. Not just injury-related that he's going to figure out. But if Washington can continue the way they are right now, then, look, they might, you know, they'll have a chance to compete for this division and for a wild card spot. There are a lot of teams that are dealing with injuries right now in the NFC that you thought were going to be playoff teams. So maybe that door is open there. Again, long season, you got to temper expectations. But if things continue the way they are right now, if there are other teams in the division are kind of limping along and Washington can continue to ascend, then, you know, they do have a real shot.
What's wrong in Philadelphia? Is it Sirianni and Jalen Hurts?
I think some of it is. I think part of the problem with Sirianni, and we saw it last year too. Look, he came in, he had a good approach. He had a creative offense that really positioned Jalen Hurts for success. But when defensive coordinators figured out what they were trying to do, he didn't have a counterpunch. And Brian Johnson became the scapegoat when it was really Nick Sirianni's offense. And Nick Sirianni basically took a step back as the play caller, brought in Kellen Moore. And, you know, I think they're still learning that offense, still trying to get comfortable with that. Then you have your top two wide receivers are out, and your top offensive lineman in Lane Johnson's out. And the defense, you know, you hired a defensive guru in Vic Fangio. You thought they'd be better, but they're having the same problems that they did last year. This roster should be better. You know, they did not look like they were well prepared last week. That falls on the head coach, the coaching staff. And so, yeah, you have to say that some of this, a lot of this has to be Sirianni not pushing the right buttons and figuring out how to get the most out of these guys.
They got a bye week coming up. They're on their bye week right now. Right. What am I talking about? This is the first bye week in the NFL, week five, and they have it. They don't play this coming Sunday. Is there any chance that there would be a change? And if so, like, who's on that staff other than Fangio that's been a head coach?
No, that's the problem. I don't think they have anybody. I don't think that they would pull the plug right now. It's still too early. Again, the division is wide open. This isn't the time to make a panic move and fire him. You got to get healthy, see where things are after that. If they had all of their horses right now and were losing games and looking as bad as they did on Sunday, then maybe so. But I think that he's going to get some more time.
I actually think, and I think you kind of implied this, well, you did say this, I actually think they're better on paper than they were at the end of last year. I mean, oh, yeah. Barkley aside, that's an obvious upgrade, but I think they're faster and they should have more speed in the secondary than they had last year.
Yeah, but they are also young in that secondary as well.
Fair enough.
A number of those guys, so you're going to have some lumps right there. But the other thing is, okay, you don't have A.J. Brown. You don't have Devontae Smith, but you do have Saquon Barkley and Dallas Goedert. Why are you not running the football? Why are you not trying to pound and control the line of scrimmage? And that eases pressure on your quarterback, eases pressure on your offensive line. And they really just haven't, you know, we've seen spurts and stretches where Saquon Barkley is used like a workhorse back, but we haven't seen them fully lean into that. And so, I don't know. It looks like Kellen Moore, Sirianni are still trying to figure this thing out. But that's one simple thing right there. Obviously, they've still got some young guys on the front of their defense as well who are still learning a new defense. But offensively, you've got a lot of veteran guys, you know, and you would think they'd be able to get more out of them than what they're doing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see coming off that bye week where A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are, because it's crucial for them. We're talking to Mike Jones, staying in the division. I mean, Dallas got a win. It certainly wasn't impressive, and now it is a brutal stretch for them coming up here. Pittsburgh on the road, Detroit, San Francisco, Atlanta, and then it's Eagles, Houston, Washington now. It looks like a real game. Where's Dallas headed this year?
I don't know, and that's the really big question. You know, they had all the distractions, dragging out the contract stuff and everything, and you have Mike McCarthy, who's in a lame duck year, and now you look like you're going to be without Micah Parsons. You know, you got some other defensive guys that have some injuries. This is not a good situation for Dallas. Like you said, you mentioned that really tough stretch and you need your best players. And if you don't have your best defensive player and you're shorthanded, it's going to be hard to turn this thing around. They made, you know, head scratching decisions, didn't really address the running back position outside of bringing Zeke back. And he's not what he was. The offensive line isn't what it used to be. It's going to be hard for them to get this thing rolling. I think the prospects of turning things around in Philly are easier than what they'd be for Dallas because of just some of the elements and the injuries that they're looking at.
So Washington has a legitimate chance to win this division.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
I mean, when you have the guy at the most important spot in the sport, and he looks to be him, as the kids say, you got a shot, you know, against anybody. But with the division right now, the other three teams, you know, in a state of flux, best case, yeah. I mean, you know, somebody mentioned this, you know, earlier, and I answered yes, and he said, wouldn't Daniels right now be your number one quarterback if you had to pick for present and future in the NFC? I would say yes. Who would you say? Who would you put in front of him in the NFC?
Yeah, I mean, as far as judging off the potential and all that stuff, yeah. I mean, Sam Darnold is playing amazing, but you don't know how long that's going to last. It looks like, you know, Daniels has legit it factor, the accuracy, the versatility, the intelligence. He's got everything you want. You know, you just hope that he can stay healthy. He's, you know, kind of a slender guy. You hope that he, you know, doesn't take unnecessary hits, because we all know what that's like when your young star quarterback gets hurt. But if he can stay healthy, I don't see why he should not be a star in this league for a long time.
By the way, just quickly off topic, because you just brought it up. I did not know, and I followed up with him, and he said it was true. But I'm curious if you were as surprised as I was to hear Mike Silver say that Mike Shanahan went to Dan and Bruce after 2012 and recommended trading RG3. Mike told me it was true.
I had never heard that.
Me neither.
But I know that Mike Silver knows Mike Shanahan very well. So, wow, that, you know, that's, I know that at one point that Shanahan was worried about, you know, this, you know, his relationship costing him his job. I didn't know that he had, you know, told him to trade him, which is a little bit of a gutsy move, because he was part of the reason why he played him in 2013 was because he was afraid that it was going to, you know, cost him his job if he didn't. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk outside the division and outside Washington. What are the Chiefs going to do at wide receiver with Rice now done?
I mean,
is he done? It is a torn ACL, right?
They have not said, but that's what it's believed to be. So I don't expect that we're going to see him back. Xavier Worthy is talented and he's fast, but I don't know that he's ready to be your number one wide receiver. They're going to have to try to get on the phone and see if they can, you know, find the trade partner and get some guys to help them, because, look, they brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, but he's, you know, banged up and everything like that. They have Travis Kelce, who is more involved, but I don't know if he's lost something or if it's just the defense is devoting so much attention. Well, that's not going to get any better now. So I think that they got to get on the phone and find one of these teams that's got a surplus of wide receivers that doesn't look like they're going anywhere, and try to see if they can get some help. But it's also challenging. We haven't seen in-season wide receiver trades really normally pan out. Unless it's somebody that's got some familiarity with you. But it's going to be challenging for them.
I mean, it does look like, I mean, put the injuries aside, it looks like a repeat of last year right now, right, doesn't it? Right. Where there's nothing overly impressive about what they do, but don't we all expect that by the time we get to January, they've got enough wins compiled that they'll be in the postseason? We now know they can win on the road. We didn't know that before last offseason, but do you feel any less about the Chiefs today than you did, you know, after they won the Super Bowl last year?
No, because I did not expect that they were going to start out 4-0. Like, look, they should have lost since, you know, week 16 of last year. Yeah. They were having a 10-game win streak. And, look, that was not a pretty win, but it was a gritty win on Sunday. So they've shown they can win in a variety of ways. They'll lean into the run more. I mean, looks like, you know, they don't have Pacheco, but Kareem Hunt looked like he is, you know, knocking off rust and able to contribute. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are going to find a way. And so I'm still not betting against them, even though it doesn't look, you know, as rosy as what it could be.
Talking to Mike Jones from The Athletic. So let's look at a couple of the teams that have surprised and tell me, you know, if you're a believer or not. Let's start with the Vikings. They're 4-0. They're the last of the unbeatens now that Seattle went down. Legit Super Bowl contender or not?
I mean, that defense is nasty.
It is.
You know, yeah, Brian Flores brings so much pressure, and, you know, you have that, and you have a dynamic wide receiver, a strong run game, and a coach who understands how to support and position a quarterback for success. We've seen lesser quarterbacks, you know, skill-wise, win Super Bowls. You know, Sam Darnold, I think that, look, he's been in the league for 7 years. He's learned a lot, but he's also on a team that's not asking him to be Superman. He just can be himself. He's got great support all around him everywhere he turns. And so, I mean, if you can have game-changing plays from your defense and you take care of the football, which he's doing right now, they have a chance.
In the AFC North, Baltimore starts 0-2, and now they've got two impressive wins. I mean, they gave up the big lead in Dallas, but held on, and the other night was so impressive. Do you consider them? Where do you consider them on the AFC, you know, power ranking list?
I mean, again, I'm not going to bet against the Chiefs because I think they're going to figure something out, but I think that the Ravens are going to be right up there as the number two team and, you know, maybe duking it out for that number one spot because, look, it just, I guess it took a little time for them to figure out exactly how they wanted to go about this thing. But if you have Derrick Henry running like this and, you know, you have the young wide receivers really continuing to come on, the one thing that's a little concerning is the tight end position. Mark Andrews does not look like Mark Andrews anymore. But, you know, if you can be as dominant as you are running the football, that is big. And, look, their defense, they had a lot of change. They lost their defensive coordinator, and they lost the top two defensive assistants. And so people are growing into their roles. They have talent. They've got depth. And so I think that they are a team that can contend for a Super Bowl.
The AFC South is interesting to me. It just got interesting to me because I was actually talking about this earlier. I like Anthony Richardson's physical prowess, his talent, but he was raw coming out. He's still raw. I actually think the Colts have a really good roster, and I think they got a shot to win the division with Flacco. What do you think?
I don't know if they'll win the division, but he could take them to the playoffs just like he did the Browns last year. I still think that the Texans will be the team to win that division. But again, they, like you said, they've got a good roster, got a good defense. They've got a quarterback who's going to take care of the football. I don't know if they have quite the firepower, but I think that they can, you know, be a wild card team with Flacco there. And look, Richardson, he still might be good, but he just way too early, probably, you know, should not have been starting even last year. But the injuries and the decision-making around him is a little bit concerning. Like, he hurt his hip, and then you put him out there for a read option play as soon as he comes back.
Yeah.
Why are you running the ball? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
You're trying to get the kid broken up. He's now been knocked
like
out
it.
Of four of his eight games. So, I mean, give him time to continue to learn. Don't throw him out there before he's ready. Ride this thing with Flacco, see where it goes. Again, I don't think they can win the division, but they could be a wild card team with him as their quarterback.
Staying in the AFC, is there an issue between Saleh and Rodgers?
I mean, I think so. I think that there was, you know, little hints of that even last season or the off season. You know, there was just rumblings, you know, and Rodgers, you know, kind of, you know, sniping a little bit, indicating that maybe there was some, you know, dysfunctions and things like that. And it seems like it still is. He was definitely bothered by Saleh saying that maybe they need to scale back on the hard count. And he's like, no, hold these guys accountable. I mean, I don't think this thing is going to end well. You know, people were saying Super Bowl, and I thought that was a little, you know, but this is just more Jet circus, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL's wild, right? Denver goes and beats Tampa on the road by, you know, 26-7. They're an 8-point dog in the Meadowlands. Terrible weather, the whole thing. And they win that game 10-9. And they're 2-2 all of a sudden after, you know, two poor starts for Bo Nix and company. I think that's all I had for you. I was going to ask you, I guess, just about Tampa in general. That loss kind of, you wonder, but I'm a big Todd Bowles fan, so I kind of root for him from afar. I think that's a really good football team, although I think the division with Atlanta and New Orleans is going to be really competitive all year long. But what's your take on the NFC South?
Yeah, the division is better around them. Atlanta is still going to be, you know, they're going to be, you know, tough here and there, especially down the stretch of the season. I still think they're getting things figured out. I think the same with the Saints. They looked really good this first couple weeks and came back down to earth, working out some kinks and things like that. They have to find that consistency. But like you, I'm a Bowles fan. I'm also a Baker Mayfield fan. They understand their roles on that team. They're leaning into their strengths, and so I think that they can win that division. You know, even if they had been full strength, they might have, you know, the Eagles might have still lost to them, but they've got a good thing going there.
I'm going to make one other comment just to get your reaction, because I said this at the beginning of the show. Geno Smith is a good quarterback. Do you agree?
I agree with you. I was texting this morning asking different guys, coaches around the league, hey, who surprises you, who's impressed you, whatever, and two different guys said, Geno Smith is playing really good football, you know, and it's not getting talked about enough. That's what was told to me this morning. You know, he's leading the league in passing yards. He takes care of the football. You know, it's just, again, it shows you that if you have the right fit, you know, which he didn't early in his career, and now he does, you can still have, you know, success. It's not just about, you know.
Look who we've talked about. Darnold, right. Mayfield, yep. Smith, mm-hmm. All, you know, ship has sailed conversations from years past.
Yep, exactly. And now that these guys are in situations that, you know, they were able to pick and find the right fits for them, and it's now paying off for them and the teams that have them.
Good to talk to you. Hope you're well. Thanks, as always.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Mike Jones, everybody. The show is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on an iPhone 16 Pro. Up next, you'll hear my conversation with Tom Lavero on the passing of Pete Rose. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app. From Danny, he writes, you do know that Magic Johnson is one of the most successful business people of all time. Yeah, that's what we were talking about. He went on and on about how Paulie and I, in our call and talking about everything that Magic touches turns to gold, he thought was a reference to something else. No, it was exactly that reference. Magic is unquestionably, you know, next to Tiger and Michael, but in terms of being his own, being a true entrepreneur in business, there's never been any athlete, I can't think of the one that's had more success post-career as an entrepreneur than Magic Johnson. Like, literally, you're right. Everything he seemed to invest in turned into gold, and now that he is part of this ownership group, maybe it's his touch that's a part of this. All right, so yesterday Pete Rose passed away at the age of 83 years old. You know, one of the greatest hitters of all time, not the greatest hitter of all time, but one of the greatest hitters of all time. But of course, a very complex, you know, obituary to write, because while great in baseball, he's been barred from the Hall of Fame all of these years. And that's always going to be a part of his of the remembering of Pete Rose. So Tommy and I, we recorded my podcast with him earlier today, and I just cut out the part, the 7 or 8 minutes. Tommy's a Hall of Fame baseball voter, has been for years, long time, highly respected MLB writer in that community. So perfect timing to have him on the show to get his thoughts about Pete Rose's passing.
Well, you know, it's it's a sad story. You can't tell the story about Pete Rose without talking about how he's not in the Hall of Fame, because this is what everybody wants to talk about. He's got one of the most revered, if not the most revered record in all sports, with 4,256 career hits, the most in the history of Major League Baseball. But the thing that kept Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame was Pete Rose. Okay, and it wasn't just betting on baseball. It was his continued behavior after he retired. And his continued cluelessness about about his position and what he needed to do to get back into good graces of the game. It's a complicated story. I really think that Pete Rose is part of his symbolism, why fans fell in love with him when he was a player,
right,
is because he represented a style of play that at the time when baseball players' salaries were skyrocketing and players were going on strike, here you had Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle, running down the first base for a walk. Okay, sliding head first, getting his uniform dirty. So he became the symbol for people about what they loved about the game. But it's ironic because nobody cared about money more than Pete Rose. I mean, Pete Rose wanted to get reinstated. He was banned from baseball in 1989 by the commissioner of baseball after they found evidence he bet on baseball when he was manager of the Reds and bet on his own team. A charge that he denied, lied about for 15 years until he finally came forward in a book that he made money off of to finally admit he bet on baseball. He was banned by Major League Baseball.
Just real quickly, for people that don't know the Pete Rose story, he was not betting on baseball when he was a player. He bet on baseball manager.
We don't have evidence of that.
Okay, but he did not. He admitted to betting on baseball as a manager and betting on his own team.
Right, because that was the evidence that they had. He admitted to the evidence that they had. I'm sure he bet on baseball when he played. I mean, it just didn't kick in when he was a manager. And this guy used to hang out at racetracks when he was a kid.
Okay, fair enough.
So, so in 1989, he was banned by the commissioner, lifetime ban, and in 1991, I think it was 1991, 2 years later, the Hall of Fame passed a rule saying if you've been banned from baseball, you can't be on the Hall of Fame ballot. So Pete Rose was never on a ballot to be even voted on for the Hall of Fame by writers. So writers never even had a chance.
What would the result have been?
That's interesting, because he was beloved by writers because he liked writers. He never turned writers away. He always had stories for writers. He was never scared of them, never worried about what he had to, that what he said would get him in trouble, which is part of his problem. That's interesting. I don't think he would have gotten in, because you need 75% to get in the Hall of Fame, and that's a lot of friends, okay? So I don't think he would have gotten in, and as a result, he's never been on the Veterans Committee ballot. I'm not sure the veterans would vote him in, because he was not particularly well-liked by people other than his teammates. I had a major league, a Hall of Famer tell me that the only reason he wanted to get reinstated in baseball didn't really have to do with the Hall of Fame. He wanted to manage again because managers were making $2 or $3 million a year.
Right.
And he wanted that money. So I know people, he's a beloved figure. People will rally around the idea that, he should be in the Hall of Fame. His artifacts are all over the Hall of Fame. His uniform's there. His bat's there. He just doesn't have a plaque. And I don't see that changing after his death. And Shoeless Joe Jackson is a far more sympathetic figure. And they wrote songs. They made movies about Shoeless Joe Jackson. He's not in the Hall of Fame. The guy who was involved in the 1919 Black Sox betting scandal. So if he's not in, I just don't see Rose ever getting in, period.
Tommy, 17-time All-Star, still the record for the most hits ever in the history of baseball, 4,256 hits, most games played in, most at-bats of all time. Where does he rank baseball-wise in terms of the greatest hitters of all time?
Well, you know, he doesn't rank high.
He doesn't.
He's not high. You know what was ironic? I mean, high, I mean, not top five, not top ten.
Right.
You know? What's ironic is he got voted to the 1999 MasterCard all-time baseball team. Okay? He got voted to that. Frank Robinson did not. Pete Rose was put up some great numbers, but he wasn't the player Frank Robinson was.
Is Ted Williams the greatest hitter of all time? When you're asked this question, who's the greatest hitter of all time?
I would say Ted Williams.
Okay.
I mean, considering the numbers he put up while missing 5 years in the service, you know, as a war hero during World War II and Korea, and he still put up these tremendous numbers. Yeah, Ted Williams is considered the all-time best home run hitter. Ty Cobb is right up there. Ruth is up there. Ruth had a career batting average of .342. Okay. Tony Gwynn.
Is
up there.
Rod Carew.
You know? Yes, these are all guys.
What about Barry Bonds?
Well, Barry Bonds was a steroid user.
I understand
that. He was one of the great hitters of all time.
Okay.
But he was a steroid user. You'd have to consider him as one of the
great
hitters of all time. Willie Mays, one of the great players of all time. That's as opposed to great hitters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Willie Mays may be the greatest player of all time. And then you have to include the Negro League players now. You have to include Josh Gibson, you know, when you're talking about the greatest players of all time. Oscar Charleston. So it's a complicated thing. Rose's legacy is complicated, but he was his own worst enemy.
I just found something. Ted Williams in 1994 ranked the top 20 hitters of all time, and Pete Rose was not on the list. He went Ruth, you know, he did not include himself. He went Ruth 1, Gehrig 2, Jimmy Fox 3, Hornsby 4, DiMaggio 5, Cobb 6, Musial 7, Joe Jackson 8, Hank Aaron 9, and Willie Mays 10. Frank Robinson was 18 on the list. All right, one other quick thing.
Two things real quick.
Yep.
He bet on baseball. He bet on his own team. Okay, supposedly never to lose, only to win. But he bet with mob bookies. Okay, so he had, these are the kind of connections
that you're
baseball
right.
could not afford to have.
Of course.
And then there was a whole other incident where he was accused of a young woman accused him of having sex with her when she was 14 and 15 years old. He denied it. He said, I had sex with her when she was 16. He was in his 30s.
Yeah, that's crazy.
16, that's the legal age in Ohio. So, that doesn't help his case either, since part of the criteria of elections to the Hall of Fame is character integrity.
That was Tommy from my podcast today talking about Pete Rose and the passing of Rose at 83 years old. All right, when we come back, I'm going to focus in on the defense and give you the player that actually has a chance to really lead, not a turnaround from the first four games, but some sort of rebound to something respectable because he's played exceptionally well. He's the one. The answer when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. There are problems with a lot of teams around the league. We just talked to Mike Jones. I mean, certainly the Jets situation, Rodgers and Sala, the Sirianni and Jalen Hurts situation. There may be a brewing situation in Vegas. There was a tweet that from Sports Illustrated, don't be surprised if Davante Adams has already played his last snap with the Raiders. That was per Michael Fabiano with Sports Illustrated. Michael is, with Sports Illustrated. And the head coach of the Vegas Raiders, Antonio Pierce, liked that tweet. I have heard nothing but incredible things about Antonio Pierce over the years. I remember when he took over as interim for Josh McDaniel in Vegas, Cooley called me up and he said, that's not going to be interim. He will get that job. And I said, really? And he said, the most impressive teammate he's ever had, and said everybody that was around Antonio Pierce here in Washington knew that he would end up being a great coach. Okay, that is silly. You can't be on social media as a head coach liking a tweet about your receiver, Devontae Adams, a reporter reporting, don't be surprised if he's played his last snap with the Raiders. First of all, it's really immature. Secondly, if you're going to trade Devontae Adams, you can't have your coach wishing it to be true, essentially, a few weeks in advance of the trade deadline. You don't want to lose leverage. It's better to have more leverage when you're trading. That's really stupid from apparently a really smart dude. It'll be interesting, by the way. You know, Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins, Deontay Johnson, and Devontae Adams are all receivers that could be available. The Chiefs are clearly at the front of the line, right? Because they have real legitimate Super Bowl aspirations. And if Rashee Rice is lost for the year, I would imagine they're going to be out wide receiver shopping here. Can you imagine Devontae Adams and Patrick Mahomes together? Would the Raiders actually trade Devontae Adams within the division? I can't see that happening. Deontay Johnson would be an excellent fit, I think, for them. So, Sunday's game, by the way, it's going to be interesting to see if Myles Garrett will be available. He got banged up at the end of a game that he was banged up going into it, and he still had two sacks. Nick Chubb is coming off that PUP list this week, but, he's designated for return off the PUP list, but you have a three-week period to activate him. I don't think he'll be active in his first week of being eligible to be activated. But, you know, the truth is, if you're looking at what Washington's weakness is and what, the Cleveland Browns' strength is offensively, is they can actually run the football, even with Jerome Ford. Now, I'm assuming Deshaun Watson's still going to start at quarterback and it's not going to be Jameis Winston, but Jerome Ford is averaging well over 5 yards per carry in the first four games of the season. So they can run the football. Obviously, they use their quarterback and Watson in the run game, both as a dual threat and certainly as a scrambler. Their issue is when he drops back to throw the football. I mean, he's right now got a terrible passer rating, terrible QBR overall. He's thrown three interceptions in four games. He's also fumbled a couple of times this year. Deshaun Watson's a mess, personally and otherwise. There's no doubt about that. But running the football would be the emphasis for anybody that's facing Washington. And that leads me to this, because I said earlier, they don't have that player on defense that can elevate everybody else around him like they have on offense right now with Jaden Daniels. They've got a quarterback right now that basically everything looks great around him because he is playing at an elite level. And Drew tweeted me and said, I think you're wrong about not having a dynamic player on D. Watch Luvu. You're right, Drew. Luvu's been by far and away the brightest light defensively through these first four games. You know, in watching him, and we talked a little bit about this after the Cincinnati game, and I mentioned this in my game take on Monday, yesterday, that Luvu continues to be one of those guys that consistently sticks out. He is an excellent football player, and it's interesting to see. Watch, you know, he's an off-ball linebacker. He is sometimes, you know, lined up on weak side, sometimes strong side. He's not an edge rusher, but he does generate pass rush when he comes. I mean, he is disruptive, but he's the only one right now. I mean, Wagner's collecting a lot of tackles. Wagner's certainly high IQ. I like Bobby Wagner out there for this team right now. But Luvu's the guy that right now is playing well. I don't think anybody else defensively has played well. You can put Wagner, if you want, into that category. But Luvu's the guy that can make plays. He is so intense, so high motored. He takes on tight ends, he takes on tackles, and sometimes on the same play. And I mentioned yesterday that part of why they were able to get off the field defensively, you know, without, you know, rehashing the Arizona made no sense to stop running the football, especially in short yardage situations. But they got into good second down and distance situations on a few drives after the opening drive. And Luvu had a lot to do with that. You know, if you go to the Cardinals' second drive after they, you know, went 9 plays, 55 yards, scored to take a 7-0 lead. They start first and 10. There's a 4-yard run, not a 9-yard gash. Luvu with the tackle. There is a second down and 10 where they did stick with the run, and Luvu nails James Conner for a 1-yard run. Ultimately, 3rd and 9, they don't complete it. They punt. Next drive. No, it wasn't the next drive. Let me just look at my notes. The next drive. They've got the 1st and 10, and actually on that particular play, Percy Butler was in the box, and he made a really good play on Conner on 1st down. They got really good tight. They got very good 1st down wise to set up 2nd and 10s and longer. And then they dropped Murray back, and here comes Luvu. Here comes Armstrong, sack, and it's 3rd and 15, and they punt the football. The 3rd and not the 3rd and 1. Where was it? 1st and 10 on their next drive, the one that ends with the 4th and 1 stop. They're in our territory. DeMarcado's in the game at running back, and Luvu comes in, breaks up, you know, 2 would-be blockers, and makes the tackle for no gain. So they're in 2nd and 10. He's played at a high level. He's the one. I don't know what PFF's numbers are. Denton isn't here today. Denton sometimes shares those PFF numbers with me. I would imagine Luvu and Wagner are their top-ranked PFF guys. But Luvu's the one that actually can make a difference. What you'd love to see with Luvu, with his pressures, with some of his big hits, with some of his disruption, is it lead to more takeaways. You know, because right now Washington's got 2 total takeaways on the season. They only have 1, you know, giveaway, which is great. But this was, you know, the Quinn Joe Witt Jr. mantra. We have thrived by being at the top of the league in takeaways. They're next to last through 4 games. You know what helps a defense, which isn't that good to begin with? Just a couple of plays a game. A couple of, you know, the punch out from St. Juice in the Giant game. What they did at the end of the game, that's fine. It's 35-14 when, you know, Wilson gets the ball knocked out, you know, by Chin and Luvu, you know. You need those in the early portions of games. Washington's only had 1 drive during this incredible offensive stretch start in the opponent's territory, and that was based off a special teams Austin Ekeler return on Monday night in Cincinnati. All right. Thanks to Nikki Javala. Thanks to Mike Jones. Thanks to Tommy. And thanks to Chris, who was in for Denton today. Back tomorrow, Chris Russell is up next.